very frigid and icy day, Gerardo Edelstein, music director of the Williamsport Symphony Orchestra, stopped into the Williamsport studio to talk about plans for the February concert. Entitled Four Great Bees, Maestro Edelstein has matched Beethoven with Bruckner, Barber and Borodin to create a concert that promises to be warming, uplifting, exciting and moving. Special guests for this concert will be the Williamsport Civic Chorus, with two local accomplished favourites singing solo part on Bruckner's Te Deum, Emily Wirtz and Michael Connor, who is also the music director of the Williamsport Civic Chorus. The concert is to take place on Tuesday, February the 12th at 7:30 p.m. at the Community Arts Centre in Williamsport. Here's what Gerardo Edelstein had to say about his choices of music for this concert.
This concert will feature the four Bs. And people probably would laugh about this because, in theory, in reality, the three big Bs have been always Bach, Beethoven, and Brahms. And so I extracted one of those, Beethoven, and decided to incorporate him into another group of three great Bs, and we call it the four Bs. It was actually, of course, by coincidence, but it happens that these four composers for these concerts are exceptional, you know, each one in its own way. The concert will start with Beethoven, with one of his most famous overtures, the Fidelio Overture, Opus 72, and this overture has a story, actually a long story, because Beethoven wrote this piece for his only opera called Fidelio. But it was not called that way in the early days when he started writing. So the first thing that always puzzled me, why Beethoven only wrote one opera? And still the question, it's unanswered. He felt after finishing Fidelio that perhaps theater is not his thing. Perhaps his passion is more for chamber music, piano music, symphonies, of course. And he had some difficulties to write this, I think, magnificent opera. In the early days, it was called Leonora. And why it was called Leonora? Because Leonora was one of the main characters of the opera. And what the story tells, also the libretto that has some spoken dialogue, tells how Leonora, disguised as a prison guard named Fidelio, and she rescues her husband, Florestan, from death in a political prison. So not quite, just an appealing plot, I would say. But, you know, during that time, it was all the Napoleonic Wars and the French Revolution. So there were so many things happening during those years that it's not a surprise that, you know, the operas written during that time had some political context. Nevertheless, Beethoven wrote three overtures for that first attempt opera called Leonora, and was not happy with the first one, was not happy with the second one. The one that is most performed is the Leonora number 3. That is a very extensive overture, more than usual. It's about 15 minutes long. When during that time, it was very common for overtures to be very short, very lively, just as an introduction of the opera. So Beethoven, after hearing that critique, people came close to him and he said, well, maybe you should consider something else. Just keep using that music. It's beautiful in the opera, but for the overture, you should think on something else. Beethoven, it took him 10 years of revisions and changing the plot, the libretto, actually. And finally, he came up with a shorter overture, much livelier, and he decided to change also the name of the opera from Leonora to Fidelio. And this is the opera, this is the overture, actually, that made it to the concert hall and that everybody now plays it outside the opera. You know, these days very rarely performed, but the Fidelio overture stays as a great concert overture, and that's how I decided to start the first piece in the program. Followed immediately by Bruckner's Te Deum. And Bruckner was a great admirer of Beethoven, no question. Because Bruckner, living in the Romantic period, where other composers like Wagner, Liszt, were trying to be more avant-garde, trying to write music that was outside the norm. Instead of writing symphonies, Wagner would write only operas. And Liszt will write symphonic poems. And programmatic music, yes, but more advanced in terms of the form, the harmonies, the style. Bruckner was very respectful of that, and he admired Wagner greatly, but he thought that his music should be still different, more intimate. He was a very reserved man. He lived in Vienna. He taught at the Vienna Conservatory. He was an organist, was a very devoted Catholic. And he wrote actually 11 symphonies, 9 that are the ones that are most commonly performed, and 2 that were not published during his lifetime. And it's funny, some musicologists, they call it symphony number 0, or di nulte, 0. 0, 1, 0, 2. But there are 9 actually numbered symphonies. Definitely Bruckner follows the tradition of Beethoven and Brahms in terms of size of the orchestra, even though maybe a little larger in terms of the form. He still uses the traditional forms. He uses the traditional form movements. And during the composition of his symphony number 7, that is actually my favorite, is when he decided to write a religious piece called the Te Deum. So it doesn't come by surprise to me, because he wrote several pieces for choir, having, some religious themes. And I would like to read, actually, on his own words, what he said about his Te Deum. So Brahms himself ranked his splendorous Te Deum as his favorite work, and possibly his greatest. And he said, "When God finally calls me and asks, 'What have you done with the talent I gave you, my lad?' I will present to him the score of my Te Deum, and I hope he will judge me mercifully." Very interesting, right? And another great composer, Gustav Mahler, that know him very well, who described Bruckner as half simpleton, half god, crossed out on his copy of the score the notation "Te Deum for chorus, solos and orchestra, organ ad libitum," and wrote, "For the tongues of angels, heaven blessed, chastened hearts and souls purified in the fire." That's very, very interesting. So here it is, Bruckner talking about his Te Deum as one of his greatest works, and Gustav Mahler thinking that is one of the great pieces, ever written.
Now, he describes it as written for tongues of angels. So do you happen to have any angels coming in to sing it?
No, we will actually have real people. But, I can imagine them actually being sort of angels on stage, because it's this fabulous choir that I got to know already 2 years ago for the 50th anniversary, the Williamsburg Civic Chorus. We performed together, among other choirs as well, the great Gustav Mahler Symphony No. 2, The Resurrection. And for me, it was a discovery, because it was the first time I collaborated with them. Just great people, wonderful conductor, Michael Connor. It was a joy to work with him, and that's why it was no-brainer when I decided to do the Bruckner, to invite him to collaborate again. It's a group of 70, 80 singers, that they do this for the love of singing, for the love of music. And what Michael has done in a very short period of time is really commendable. I'm really, really looking forward to collaborate with them again, with the additions of 4 fabulous soloists that some you will recognize because they have sung here before. Emily Wirtz will be the soprano. Amanda Siliker, who she used to sing here with the chamber choir for a while. She lives outside State College, and I've been in touch with her since, and, we're glad to have her back. Michael Connor will be the tenor soloist, so he's not only going to have the role of the conductor of the choir, but also the tenor soloist. And I have to tell you, Fiona, it's a very tough part. So I'm sure he's working really hard. It's very challenging. And the baritone bass part will be sung by Ted Christopher. He's a professor at opera theater at Penn State University. It's a graduate from Curtis Institute of Music and sung with the San Francisco Opera, was at several programs with the Juilliard School of Music, and has been at Penn State already for at least 10 years, if not more. So the text of the Te Deum. The Te Deum is an early Christian hymn of praise, possibly dating from the 4th century. It's often credited to the bishop and composer of liturgical verse, Nicetas of Remesiana. The title comes from the text's opening Latin words, Te Deum Laudamus, Thee, O God, we praise. And its musical performance traditionally takes place on occasions of special rejoicing. It remains in regular use among Roman Catholics, Lutherans, and Anglicans. You know, I've had the chance to perform several Te Deums. Mozart has Te Deums, and other, romantic composers have Te Deums. Of course, there is the humongous Berlioz Te Deum that requires a huge number of people. This one is very special to me because the music is very direct. It's in C major, so it's a key that it's, you know, if you're familiar with music, the keys that there's all the white keys. And
it's an accessible key, isn't it?
It's an accessible, yeah. It's like very open, very... When you start studying music, especially piano, you know, most of the compositions are in C major because are, as you say, one of the most accessible keys. So I think that he wants to have both the direct contact with humanity and direct contact with God. So it's both at the same time. So then he presents the theme very openly and very excitingly and gloriously. Every part of the Te Deum is followed, every choral part is followed by the soloist. So then it's choir, soloist, to end close to the end with a traditional fugue that is always the hardest part in any of the vocal pieces, and ends again gloriously the same way the piece starts. And you know what is interesting, that it ends with an accelerando, just pushing the music forward. It's like, let's get close to glory as soon as possible, you know, to divinity, to excitement, to happiness. So I'm really looking forward to this performance of Bruckner's Te Deum.
So that's what you've got. You've got Beethoven and then Bruckner, and then we're done.
No. Yes. You know, it's one of those concerts that you have several ending pieces, because the Beethoven is an overture that could easily end or even be an encore. It's not very long. And then you have this incredible Bruckner's Te Deum that ends gloriously, and you could end the concert with that as well. But then you say, well, let's have a second half. Let's have the, if Bruckner was the main course, let's have the two desserts, because the two next pieces are exquisite. The first one will be Barber's Adagio for Strings. What can I say about this piece? It's one of the most famous, perhaps, American pieces, a piece written by an American composer, because people may know that Barber, being a post-war composer, he's not like Copland in a sense that he follows most the European tradition of writing, his harmonies, his melodies. There are, if you don't know the piece, that it will be very rare, right? Who does not know the Adagio for Strings, right?
Well, if they don't think they know it, I think within about the first or second bar, they'll go, oh, yes.
Oh, yes, I recognize that. And so if it happens that you've never heard this piece before, you would imagine, yeah, this was written, I'm sure, by an European composer in the late Romantic period. But not. It's our own Samuel Barber, who writes incredible music, beautiful symphonies, and beautiful overtures, essays for orchestra, you know, a beautiful opera, and ballet. And this Adagio for Strings, that it comes from a string quartet, actually, is the slow movement, his string quartet opus 11. It was so successful that he decided to expand it. I don't want to say it even revised it or arranged it, because it's exactly the same music as the quartet, basically with a large component of strings. And when you hear it with, 40, 50 strings, it's to die for. You know, that's what I think, I hope also. to hear some sobbing and some tears in the hall, because it's that kind of music that really gets you inside your body, your heart, your brain, and you cannot be totally, you know, outside this. You cannot be...
You can't be indifferent.
Indifferent.
To this.
That's the word I was looking for. You cannot be indifferent to this piece. You know, it grabs you somehow. And it's one of those pieces that I always really enjoy performing, even though it may make me cry on stage as well. And since I said Fiona before, that is two desserts, right? So for the second half, this is one of those desserts that you don't want ever to end, to finish. It's the chocolate mousse that you enjoy so much, and you said, oh, is it over? So that's what it is, the Adagio for strings. And even though it can get some people just very sensitive, you know, I think we need that in life too. We need that in life too. The joy in more the more contemplative, the more introspect music. And that's what this piece is about. And following that, the well-known Prince Igor Polovetsian Dances by Alexander Borodin. I don't know if the audiences know about Borodin, but you know, they heard the name, of course. We performed here Symphony No. 2. And everybody will recognize this Polovetsian Dances. You know, it's pretty much similar in a way what pop culture, I don't know if that's the right term, has done. I mean, the Adagio for Strings has been showcased in many TV shows, in many movies, and also the Polovetsian Dances, because they are beautiful dances, very exciting, very rhythmic, very powerful, very intense, very melodic. So they are very appropriate for a TV show or a movie as well. So, but this, the audiences may not know. Borodin was a chemist. So his life was kind of divided in two, split it in two. So part of his life, he was dedicated to his, you know, chemistry. He was teaching also that at the university in St. Petersburg in Russia. And the other half will be dedicated to composing, writing music, playing the cello, and also being part of the Mighty Five. Is this group of five Russian composers. They include Balakirev, Sui, that is less known, Borodin, Mussorgsky, and Rimsky-Korsakov. So that the other four composers included Borodin into this group, it was a great honor for Borodin, just because he was not 100% a composer or a musician. Maybe something a little more common during those days, or maybe he just thought about financially, that he wanted to make money first and then see if he's going to make it with music. Who knows? But he composed this opera, Prince Igor, all by itself. When I'm saying all by itself, because he also wrote the libretto. And pretty much his entire life was dedicated to this project. And unfortunately, he did not finish it. So other two composers, in this time not in this group, Glazunov, actually was Rimsky-Korsakov and Glazunov, who finished because they thought it was so good and so important for the audience to get to know this piece that they finished orchestrating and putting together the final pieces so that we could know today what Prince Igor is and, of course, the Polovetsian Dances. You know, during this period of time in the 19th century, every opera had to have a ballet component. There had to be some dancing. If not, it was not complete, the opera. All in the 19th century, you know, you see it in most of the traditional, most of famous opera, ballet. And there we go. So Borodin, he didn't want to be the outsider who will not include ballet music. The major events were just go to the opera, and people wanted to be entertained. And if it was a drama, you know, people needed to see the other side of it too. I mean, Prince Igor is not a, you know, a light story. You know, Prince Igor gets arrested or kidnapped, and the big Khan is the one who wants to rule over the entire area, and this ballet comes while Prince Igor is a prisoner, so as a sort of entertainment. You know, and I had the chance to watch the opera many years ago. I think it was in Washington, the Washington Opera. It's long, it's heavy, but, you know, when the Polovetsian dances, they start, everybody wakes up, and they, you know, the applause that they get to this, you know, said, oh, well, it's the end of the opera. But it's not. There is a lot more after that. I think that this selection is the most successful musical part of the entire opera, and that's why it stayed forever in the concert hall. And, you know, I'm really excited to perform it with the symphony, showcasing many, many sections of the orchestra. It's full of very brassy, like a lot of Russian music, lots of colorful percussion. No surprise when we know that Rimsky-Korsakov helped to finish the piece. And some wonderful solos for all the wind instruments. Now talking about the workout for the strings, so the orchestra will definitely shine with this piece and with this concert that I hope everybody will take a break from this cold weather and will flock into the CAC to hear these fabulous performances.
And that's all to take place on Tuesday, February the 12th.
Yes, and I hope to see you all there, and I hope you enjoy the concert.
Maestro Gerardo Edelstein speaking about the February concert program for the Williamsport Symphony Orchestra. The program will include the Fidelio Overture by Beethoven, the Adagio for Strings by Samuel Barber, Borodin's Polovetsian Dances, and Bruckner's Te Deum, with guest choir, the Williamsport Civic Chorus, and soloists Emily Wirtz and Michael Connor. The concert will take place at the Community Arts Centre in Williamsport on Tuesday, February the 12th, beginning at 7:30 p.m. For tickets, you can go online to caclive.com or give the CAC box office a call at 570-326-2424. Thank you very much to Gerardo Edelstein.
And thanks to you, Fiona Powell.